This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is The Informer, Australia's only LGBTIQ+ national news and current affairs show. Proudly sponsored by KHQ Lawyers. Passionate about being the best.
Australia has already seen extraordinarily hot conditions this year. In September, temperatures in New South Wales, Queensland, and the Northern Territory broke records, with some areas recording temperatures 10 degrees higher than the previous seasonal records. Homes have been lost, and firefighters have faced exhausting and brutal conditions. At the same time, 99% of New South Wales is presently in drought, with desperate farmers and communities calling out for assistance from the federal government. So, as we enter into Australia's traditional bushfire season, we wanted to get a clearer picture of what's causing these conditions, what they mean for natural disasters in Australia, and how well prepared are the authorities. To begin with, to get a better understanding of what's been driving the record-breaking conditions, I spoke with Jonathan Pollock from the Bureau of Meteorology.
So the year-to-date, the rainfall has been very low. It's been quite dry. It's the fourth driest on record for Australia. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's also been very warm. It's been the warmest since the records began in 1910 for those year-to-date temperatures. So that warm and dry, that sort of favours some types of severe weather. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason why it's been so warm and dry is because of this event out in the Indian Ocean called Positive Indian Ocean Dipole. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly strong at the moment. When we look back into the history of these events, this one sort of really stands out, and it's comparable to a couple of big events we had back in sort of 1997 and 1994. So we haven't seen something quite this strong in a while, and it's really been driving the warm and the dry conditions. So when we've got a positive Indian Ocean dipole, what we have in the sea surface temperature patterns is we see cooler than usual waters in the eastern Indian Ocean and warmer than usual waters across in the west. So just sort of to the northwest of Australia, around Indonesia, we have cooler than usual waters. But on the other side of the basin, they're sort of warmer than usual. And what this does is it sets up a pattern in the atmosphere mm-hmm. where the cloudiness and rainfall sort of favours that western part of the Indian Ocean, so over towards Africa. And we have less cloudiness and less rainfall in the eastern part, sort of to the north of Australia. And that can really affect our spring, our winter and spring rainfall and temperature patterns across large parts of Australia, not just in the north, sort of where the sea surface temperatures are close to, but even all the way down in Melbourne and across Victoria too. And that's part of the reason why we've had sort of a long stretch of below average rainfall and at the same time some warmer than usual temperatures. Now, not each positive Indian Ocean dipole is the same. And down in southern Victoria, it's actually been a fairly mild sort of winter spring. We've had rainfalls fairly close to average, just sort of to the west and east of Melbourne. Mm-hmm. But further north, it's been a lot drier. And in New South Wales, South Australia, and southern Queensland, it's been much drier than usual. Those places have had below average rainfall for quite a long time, sort of right across winter and spring. Whereas for Victoria, we were a bit lucky this year. We only sort of started to see that dry influence from the positive Indian Ocean dipole across northern parts of Victoria, really mm-hmm. starting at the end of winter. So in some ways, we've been lucky down here in Victoria compared to places just a bit north of us. Well, some of the most significant severe weather that we need to watch out for in Melbourne are things like heat waves. So we're forecasting sort of warmer than usual conditions for the rest of spring and into summer. And it's also been, as we've mentioned, a lot drier than usual to the north of us. Now, when the soils have some moisture in them, they can actually provide a bit of evaporative cooling. But because we've had below average rainfall, the soils are much drier than usual, so they won't offer us that sort of buffer this summer. At the same time, we've seen an increasing trend sort of in warm days since we started taking temperature measurements in Australia. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of adding to the impact of natural factors as well, increasing the likelihood of heat waves occurring.
There is some good news, though. Australia is likely to experience fewer cyclones this year, though that does mean less rain, as Jonathan goes on to explain.
So this summer, it's likely that we'll see fewer cyclones than usual. However, when we're talking about overall numbers of cyclones in the Australian region, what can really impact on rainfall or rainfall in particular areas is the path that individual cyclones take. So even though we've got an outlook for fewer than average cyclones, what any one particular cyclone does will end up really dictating sort of the rainfall story for some areas across summer. And we've never had a season without a cyclone crossing the coast somewhere in Australia, mm-hmm. which is something to remember. And it really only takes one to make a big difference to rainfall patterns.
And why is that?
Because a tropical low, a tropical cyclone, or even a system that doesn't get to the intensity of a tropical cyclone, something we call a tropical low, if it's moving fairly slowly, it can drop a lot of rainfall. Mm-hmm. And so that increased rate, that intense rainfall over the same area, will often produce things like flash flooding.
Yeah,
and that can be sort of localized, or it's not something that can will affect the whole state or the whole east coast. It can be confined to sort of the path of where the cyclone's going. So you can see really big differences between areas of the same state after a cyclone moves through.
That was Jonathan Pollock from the Bureau of Meteorology. Aside from cyclones and heat waves, bushfires have already left their mark in Australia this year. To better understand exactly how these changing climatic conditions make fires worse, the Informer spoke with David Bowman, Professor of Pyrogeography and Fire Science at the University of Tasmania.
Yeah, well, it's happening right now here in Tasmania. This is Friday in October, late October, and we're seeing, fire weather conditions that really would be at home in summer, and we are seeing some fires that are being fought fairly aggressively by the Tasmanian Fire Service using aircraft, trying to stem fires which are burning in very dry fuels because we've had basically below average rains for quite a while. We are getting some rain, but it still is quite dry. But we're having higher temperatures and very strong winds. And that combination of dryness, high temperatures, and strong winds is, the classic recipe for bushfires here in Australia. And what has happened is that the shoulder seasons of the peak fire activity, which generally in southern Australia is in January and February, the shoulder seasons are moving right out, into the spring, early spring, and also into the late autumn. And we've seen, the Tathra fire, for instance, on the south coast of New South Wales. That was a very late fire. I can't remember the exact date, but it was very late in a fire season. I think it was in March or maybe possibly April. So we're seeing this expansion of the fire seasons. We're also seeing within the fire seasons more frequent, very extreme fire weather. And this is placing a huge stress and strain on firefighting capacity, but also on ecological systems and on human communities.
And what kind of impacts does that strain have, in particular upon ecological systems and the emergency services?
Well, that's a really important question. One of the things that goes with these fire events are heat waves. And so humans and other animals and indeed plants get very stressed during these prolonged periods of above average temperatures, and so that physiologically they're stressed, and then you burn them, their recovery can be quite limited. In the case of plants, a lot of people might not be aware that plants that bounce back, like eucalypts, after fire, they do that because they store carbohydrates in their bodies, their trunks and their roots, And that's plant food, which enables them to recover following a fire. Now, the problem is that if you're going through very dry seasons, you're growing less and you often have to dip into your carbohydrate reserves. It's like, you know, a poverty trap. You start spending your savings, and then when you have a fire, you don't have the reserves to bounce back, to grow as quickly, to mature as quickly, to produce more seed. So you become more vulnerable to another fire. And we're seeing in Victoria, you know, absolutely extraordinary increase in frequencies of fire in forest systems that would normally be burning once every, you know, 50 years. We've seen some places being burnt up to four times in 15 years. So when you have that level of frequency of burning, you can cause forests to switch into a non-forest state. And that's kind of bad because there's a lot of carbon stored in forests. Forests are very important for ecological services like water. And obviously they're beautiful and their biodiversity, you know, needs forests and so on. But the real problem from a fire point of view is that if you keep burning vegetation, you end up with vegetation that is very flammable. And so it's not like you go through this bad experience and you have a couple of fires and then, you know, it's like some childhood illness, you know, you get immunity to it. It's the exact opposite. The fires just keep happening and you end up with what's called a new fire regime, an alternative fire regime. And what scares me is that we could be seeing around most of the bushland areas around, you know, the southern Australian cities, the vegetation, which is important for water catchments and carbon storage and biodiversity, those systems are going to start burning very, very frequently. And your other question is, well, how does that affect humans? One of the overlooked ways it affects humans, apart from degrading the ecological services that we get from this vegetation, is the smoke. So a lot of people in Melbourne and Sydney and Hobart are now experiencing quite prolonged episodes of horrible smoke. And that smoke is not a nuisance. It's actually quite dangerous for vulnerable people, people with asthma, elderly people, kids, people with heart disease, believe it or not, because the particles in the smoke, absolutely super fine particles, can go straight through the lung into the bloodstream. And these bushfire smoke particles can trigger a really bad sort of immune response, and that can then cause all sorts of respiratory and cardiac problems.
That was David Bowman, Professor of Pyrogeography at the University of Tasmania, speaking with Toby Halligan. This is The Informer. Finally, we wanted to find out from someone who has extensive experience fighting fires and what it's actually like on the ground. Greg Mullins was the Commissioner of Fire and Rescue New South Wales and served as a firefighter for 39 years. Greg was one of 23 ex-firefighters who earlier this year raised major concerns about Australia's lack of action on climate change and our increasing inability to fight bushfires. The Informer spoke to Greg about the impact that climate change is having on bushfires.
Well, look, unfortunately, you know, over the time that I've been fighting fires, and that goes from 1971 to the present, because I'm back as a volunteer bushfire fighter where I first started back in the early 70s. And what's happened, the fire seasons are getting much longer. There's been less rainfall, up to 20% less rainfall in the southeast of Australia, one of the most fire-prone places on Earth, since the 1970s. Temperatures are going up, and we're getting much longer fire seasons that overlap with other states. And what that's doing, it's restricting the ability to share resources between the states, firefighting resources like aircraft, trucks and people. And we're getting more and more fires, more and more days of very high fire danger and above. There used to be long years where we didn't have major fires. Now it's just about every year. So it's just an incredible worsening, and it's not just here, it's around the world.
And in terms of the specific conditions that are changing, is it temperature? Is it lack of rainfall? Is it increased winds? Is it all of those things? Can you provide us some more context as to, I think often in this debate, partly because there are some people who perhaps seek to minimise the connection between bushfire disasters and climate change. Can you just give us your perspective on that?
Yes, certainly. And look, unfortunately, there are those who do try and minimise those links. Frankly, they don't know what they're talking about. So the people who are in charge of every fire services in every state and territory in Australia, and there's people internationally too, but I won't go there, they've all come together and said, this is getting out of control and we need to do more. But the base problem is climate change. Now, as to what is happening, just over a single degree in temperature increase on average, it's driving extremes. So we're getting incredible extremes. And we saw just a week ago in northern New South Wales and southeast Queensland, they had temperatures 10 to 12 degrees above average. And we saw what happened there, loss of many homes north of New South Wales, a couple of people lost their lives. So that's a big thing, is the extremes are far more extreme. That 1 degree lift in temperature overall, our winters are warmer, they're definitely drier, the rain patterns have shifted. That's just pure numbers from the Bureau of Meteorology. No one's making this up. It's a long-term trend. What happens, the botanists are telling me trees that may have become dormant in winter are continuing to grow. So they draw water out of the water table and the soil below them. So shallow rooted shrubs and grasses are getting drier and drier. And it's meaning our bushfire seasons are starting earlier because everything's primed, ready to burn. We're getting stronger winds. We're getting atmospheric instability that's driving strange weather patterns, getting things called pyroconvective activity. Now that's where a bushfire literally creates its own weather, can create storm clouds. And I won't go into the details on that, but it's scary fire behaviour that nobody can predict. And we had one in 2017, lightning from that storm hit new fires 30 kilometres from the main fire. So lots and lots of different factors. And the other big thing is evaporation is far higher than it was. So we have a drought, and we've always had droughts, and people are saying, well, is this caused by climate change? Very hard to attribute individual events to climate change. But the Bureau and other people are saying this is worse. One of the reasons is these high levels of evaporation. So the bush gets dry much more quickly after every little shower of rain.
And you were speaking to the ABC, I think it was now a couple of months ago, and you referred to fires becoming what you called unfightable. Can you explain a little bit more about what you meant by that?
Yes, look, throughout my firefighting career, almost 50 years, my father was a volunteer firefighter for 63 years. I learned a great deal from him. And basically what the paradigm of firefighting in Australia was and public education was, look, bushfires are survivable. You will have bad days where firefighters have to pull back and just protect property and wait until conditions moderate. You'll recall Black Saturday 2009 in Victoria, over 2,000 homes burned, 173 people lost their lives. We overturned 70 years of firefighting doctrine after that because we saw conditions that nobody could really explain at the time. So weather conditions, fire conditions, that firefighters simply couldn't deal with. It was too dangerous. They had to pull back. And basically everybody was on their own. So now we focus on emergency warnings, getting information to the public, the fire danger rating system. We had to add in catastrophic, which is literally off the scale, over the 1 to 100 scale that uses relative humidity, temperature, wind speed, etc., to determine how bad the fire danger is. We regularly get that off the scale fire danger now. And I talked about pyroconvection, pyrocumulonimbus clouds. When they occur, they can rip mature trees out of the ground like toothpicks. You can have downdrafts. The wind can change 360 degrees in a moment, and there's no way of telling what's going to happen. So, and look, firefighters have lost their lives here and overseas during events like that. So it's really scary territory.
And like I appreciate, you know, in some ways, it's probably hard to unpack all the science of it, but I think this is useful to give people context in terms of how climate change kind of works. Because as you were alluding to before, I think a lot of people operate under the perhaps erroneous assumption that, you know, say if the world on average, you know, warms by 1 or 1.5 degrees, that won't necessarily be standardized, if you like. I know you were talking before about the fact that Australia's temperatures are increasing, but it may be that in some areas they increase substantially. And in the case of fires, that can create, as you were saying, these kinds of firestorms. Can you just explain a little more about those kinds of firestorms? Because I think it kind of captures how catastrophic conditions actually look.
Yes, well, look, I suppose the best examples, I'll give a few examples. Tasmania, it used to be considered a state that didn't really have a major bushfire problem except for about once every 30 years. So they had major bushfires in 1898, 1933, 1967, when 1,600 homes were burnt, about 60 people lost their lives, 1998. And then all of a sudden, 2006, 2013, a couple of hundred buildings burnt down, the first time that ever recorded catastrophic fire danger in Tasmania. 2016, multiple lightning strikes, hundreds of lightning strikes in the World Heritage areas, which aren't supposed to burn because they're supposed to be too wet. And the carbon record says for thousands of years, they never had intense fires, and they did. 2018-19, again, lightning fires, huge areas of wet, temperate rainforest, Gondwana forest that dinosaurs used to roam through, no record of fires, but they had these major fires. Come to New South Wales, Tathra, in late March 2018, that was outside when major fires like that should have burned, 62 homes destroyed. The fire season down on New South Wales south coast has extended by up to 3 months, and that's just pure numbers. That's not speculation. That's numbers. Since the 70s, it's become far longer. We're getting these intense fires. The next month, beginning of the off-season for bushfires, when we should have been burning off, Holsworthy in New South Wales, a fire tore through to Sutherland. Incredible winds and fire behaviour. It should have been damp and no fires. We look at rainforest up near Dorigo, Yulunga, west of Mackay. Areas are burning that have never burnt before in this way. There's been low-intensity fires, but not high-intensity fires. Not high-intensity fires like we're having. So I think people are waking up. I think people are looking around thinking, well, I used to live in an area where there was no bushfire problem, and all of a sudden there is. And in Queensland in particular, this is really stark.
That was Greg Mullins, an ex-commissioner of Fire and Rescue New South Wales, and he's now on the board of the Climate Council.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.